Dr. Helen Rosenbaum has worked in the areas of community development, social research and policy development, human rights and environmental advocacy. Her PhD was gained at the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute for Medical Research, and Helen has been a member of the Australian Jewish Democratic Society for the past 20 years. She was one of over 1,000 Jewish people who signed the Jewish Council of Australia's open letter, stating that Herzog's visit, quote, betrays Jewish communities, multicultural Australia, and everyone who stands for Palestinian human rights. I asked Helen first about her family background, which I believe is instructive in understanding her views on the world today.
I think it's sort of interesting that you raise this subject of, you know, what's our background, because, for example, myself, as you've interviewed me so many times before about deep sea mining, I work in that sphere. I don't even know that my deep sea mining campaign team really know fully my background. Some of them would, who I've known for longer. But it's just like you just kind of get on with things and you don't talk about all of that stuff, I guess. But it always informs like who you are and how you work and the issues that you're drawn to in the world as well. For me, my family background is in Europe. Both my parents are Holocaust survivors. They came out to Australia in the 50s. Well, they both had interesting survival stories, as everyone who survives the Holocaust had. And, you know, a mixture of luck, a mixture of good judgments at the right time. Luck is a place and resilience, you know, just physical resilience to get through that. But even before the Holocaust, there were centuries of pogroms in Europe. So that's part of my family history. I don't know that very closely because I don't really even have a lot of information about my grandparents. Both my parents were quite scarred by the Holocaust, and I, you know, do understand that concept of intergenerational trauma that a lot of peoples who have come to Australia from different backgrounds have. And of course, our First Nations people in Australia have a huge dose of intergenerational trauma too. For me, that's always created a link in my mind and my heart with First Nations people here. And I am a member of our Sunshine Coast Reconciliation Group, I think very much because of that connection I've always felt. The reason I'm raising the Holocaust and the pogroms is I think it really, to a huge extent, informs the Jewish psyche in a way that I think a lot of people who are not Jewish don't see or don't really understand. The whole colonization of Israel, the wave of Jews who came from Europe after the Holocaust was kind of driven by a sense of we need to have a place of our own where all this persecution cannot happen to us again. I grew up with this never again will this, you know, happen to us. And even though I grew up in Australia, there was this sense of we're safe because we've got Israel. There was also a sense that we're safe because we're in this great place, Australia. That's like the other end of the world from where all those terrible things happened in Europe. But my father was like, he was a really good person, but he was, and there's a word in Yiddish, mensch, and Yiddish is the lingua franca, well, was before the Holocaust, the lingua franca of European Jews, whether they lived in Poland or Germany or Belgium or France. Most Jews could speak Yiddish and could communicate with each other, which was kind of important because Jews were being shuffled, you know, from one place to another. Shuffled's probably a gentle word. They were being traumatically, you know, evicted all through that history of pogroms and different regimes that used Jews for certain purposes, at certain times in their history in Europe and then decided that useful anymore and wanted to get rid of them. So there's all that history of almost being slightly nomadic. And then after this huge trauma, the kind of culmination of all of that and the Holocaust, to go back to this word mensch, a mensch is someone who is a really good person, who thinks about other people, who is selfless, has integrity. And that's a word I really associate with my father, except he had this huge blind spot that came out of his trauma of losing all of his family except for one brother. He had a large extended family, had a large immediate family. He was one of eight offspring, and he had a very large extended family. I can go on to the Yad Vashem site, Hand of God, that translates to. It's a museum in Israel that's a Holocaust museum. I can go on to that site and I can find the records of 60 of my relatives, Rosenbaum relatives, who were annihilated. The Germans were amazing at keeping records. On the other side, on my mum's side, I saw the hard copy and I've got the photocopy of my grandfather, my mum's dad, of the date that he was gassed in Auschwitz. But they also record, you know, what he did for a living. He was a tailor before that, how old he was, where he came from. It's just madness, total madness. I'm saying all of this because I think a lot of people do know information about the Holocaust, but all of this stuff, you know, all of this madness, all of this trauma really informs the Jewish psyche. And it's something that I think Israeli politicians, Netanyahu's an expert of this, they build on that, they count on that, and they manipulate that to create this sense of us being the world's biggest victims and this sense of fear against invasion by Arab nations, which, you know, in the past was more true than it is right now, but this sense of victimization from the Palestinians as well. There's a sense that, you know, Israel is vulnerable to Israelis and to a lot of Jews over here, that Israel is really vulnerable to the Gazans and the people in the West Bank. They don't see the reality. They can't see the reality of the situation where Israel is the dominant force, has the sophisticated weaponry, has the backing of the US, and also by providing military and other hardware, you know, lots of other countries, including Australia. The psyche is about us being vulnerable and having to protect ourselves at any cost. You know, and I think this has allowed the way right from the start of the colonization of Israel in 1948. And my father was part of that as part of a wave of post-Holocaust, very angry young people who had just lost everything in the Holocaust and wanted to create this homeland, this safe homeland. To be honest, I don't know exactly what my father did. I remember as a child asking me if he ever killed anybody, and I don't think I got a direct answer to that. But he was definitely part of that whole displacement of Palestinian people from their lands to create the State of Israel. But like nearly all other Jews in the diaspora, I grew up celebrating Independence Day every year. I went to a Jewish Sunday school. We will have, you know, singing and dancing and huge, you know, celebrations of Independence Day. I think I was about somewhere in my early 30s when I understood our Independence Day was al-Nakba for Palestinians, the catastrophe. And it's been a huge journey for me to open up and understand, you know, the other side of the story. And sad to say, I still think it's a majority of Jews in the diaspora haven't got to that point yet. But thank goodness for groups like the Jewish Council of Australia that become a hub for those of us who feel this way and feel alienated to a large extent from the mainstream Jewish community. That population of Jews like myself, it's growing. I wouldn't know what it is in month numbers, but it's quite a strong minority now, as was indicated by the recent full page ads that the Jewish Council of Australia organised, whereby over 1,000 of us put our names to a statement that opposed the recent visit of President Herzog.
Does this mean that you are an anti-Zionist Jew? How do you identify?
It's interesting, but before October the 7th, I never really interrogated myself on that question. So October the 7th being that terrible day of the terrible, well, I guess you could call them massacres that occurred in Israel from those militants from across the border from Gaza. And I also want to totally acknowledge just how traumatic and terrible, you know, inhumane that event was. And the way in which it triggered all of that stuff from the Holocaust, all of that trauma again in the psyche of Jews, both outside of Israel and inside Israel, to the extent that they are not able to recognize the even greater catastrophe that's occurred in Gaza since that time, and the even greater toll on human life and human rights that has occurred since then. But to get back to this point of Zionism, I think the whole, you know, the meaning of what Zionism is today after, since October the 7th, is really something that's up for debate. And I think people have different takes on Zionism. For me, I went through period of feeling so angry at what Israel was doing in Gaza that I sort of thought, okay, now I'm anti-Zionist. I actually joined an anti-Zionist group for a while. In the end, it for me personally, I just felt, you know, it's not the answer. What I want to be is pro-peace. I don't want to be anti anything. I want to be pro peace and to look at how we can work constructively towards peace. The Jewish Council of Australia today, it started off as an anti-Zionist organisation, and for that reason, I didn't feel comfortable to join it earlier, but I've seen it develop and mature, and I think it does amazing work. And today, if you go on its website or Facebook page, it is described as a non-Zionist organization, and I relate to that. I'm not a Zionist. I'm not anti-Zionist. There would be people in the Jewish Council of Australia who are anti-Zionist as well. That's a sort of probably a strange way to express it, but it's a broader church. You know, it encompasses a wider range of us Jews. For some people, Zionism means a Jewish homeland that is exclusively Jewish, that's not shared with Palestinians. For others of us, it might mean a place where Jews and Palestinians can live together, you know, and this just feels like such a remote vision at the moment, but in some kind of harmony, like they actually did before the British partition of Israel into the Jewish homeland and the Arab homelands. Jews and Arabs were living side by side in Jewish cities back then. And I guess being non-Zionist or anti-Zionist, you know, means that we don't need Israel at all. We can exist as Jews in the diaspora with our Jewish culture and uphold our Jewish principles and traditions without the need for a Jewish homeland. And I guess for me personally, I'm not anti-Zionist, but I am willing to question, is there a point at which we say enough is enough? Are we willing to keep fighting for a Jewish homeland at any cost to life, Palestinian lives and Jewish lives? And to me, that's still an open question. So while I'm not fervently anti-Zionist, I see so much of the Jewish diaspora's resources goes towards Israel and maintaining a Jewish state. And I just think there's possibly a lot more we could do with those resources for Jewish communities where we're actually living in the diaspora, and for broader communities, the communities around us as well.
I'm speaking with Dr. Helen Rosenbaum, who was one of 1,000 Jewish people who signed an open letter opposing the visit to Australia of the Israeli President Herzog. That was obligatory, wasn't it, that all Jewish people put money into a fund, and they had envelopes, I believe, and money was going to Israel, even as young children?
Socially, it was obligatory, you know, in a way. There's a Jewish National Fund, which is actually, you know, raising money, I think, fairly exclusively for Israel. I'm out of touch with these things now, but I grew up with these kind of, the Israeli flag is, I think, quite a lot of us have seen quite a bit of the Israeli flag. It's blue and white. And there were these kind of like money boxes, tin money boxes that were blue and white that you would collect money in. And, you know, it would be collected at certain times when money was accumulated. People would go, especially in the sort of more Jewish-dominated suburbs. So in Melbourne, that would be, you know, around Caulfield and South Caulfield. In Glen Huntly, you know, people would go door-knocking to collect for this. And ironically, you know, I grew up with these stories, like, which most of us did. And there are huge parallels with the stories we've told ourselves about the settlement of Australia as well, the colonisation of Australia. So, you know, the Palestinians, the Arabs, they were unsophisticated, primitive peoples. They didn't know how to farm the land. And us smart Jews, we came in from Europe and we turned the desert into blooms. I did an agricultural science degree way back, and I was quite idealistic about Israel at that time, in my late teenagerhood. My intention was to do an agricultural science degree to then go live in Israel and to contribute to the great agricultural enterprise that, you know, Israel was very proud of being. And when I was learning agricultural science, there were a lot of examples around irrigation and other methods that came from Israel that we learnt about. I don't think Israeli agriculture is probably very sustainable by the way, you know, the way we would measure sustainability or think about sustainability these days. I don't know if it's changed over time, but I think there was probably, at least initially, a lot of pesticide and a lot of fertiliser use.
We would like to have gone there and studied here and worked in Israel, but you didn't do it. What changed your mind in the end?
What changed my mind in the end was, I think, just feeling like, you know, fairly solidly that Australia was home and Israel was not home. And I think for a lot of people from different ethnicities, because I remember having conversations with people I met at university who are Greek or Italian, and we used to have these conversations about, were we Greek, Italian, Jewish first, or were we Australian first? And I think where I ended up landing on this is that my heart's in Australia. It's with the Australian landscape, with, you know, the extent to which we still have some indigenous knowledge that, you know, I can learn about. That makes me feel rooted to Australia, even though I'm so on the outer of that. And I, you know, for me, I'm a bushwalker, and I love being out in nature, often just on my own, and I just sort of yearn to be part of this landscape. And I don't have those feelings about Israel. So I guess for me, you know, yeah, Australia is well and truly home. But for a lot of Jews in the diaspora, including here in Melbourne and in Sydney, there is such a strong connection, a heart connection with Israel. And this is something that I find hard to understand, and I think people who are not Jewish would find it even much harder. There's such a strong heart connection with Israel that if Israel was under threat, they feel that as an anxiety and a stress, as if they personally and their own immediate family were under threat, their lives are being threatened. It's really hard to explain. But because of that, I do actually understand why, for many Jews, the visit of President Herzog actually meant something important to them in terms of reassurance and safety and security here in Australia. So it is complex and fraught, and I personally opposed his visit because I think for the greater Australian community, it was always going to be something that created conflict. But I do understand where they're coming from. I just wish it could have been another Jewish identity that wasn't wedded to the Israeli regime that's perpetrating these abuses and war crimes in Gaza. But I do try to understand where those mainstream Jewish, you know, minds are at, I guess.
Just finally, Helen, are you fearful for the future, or do you believe things will calm down? Or what do you believe will happen in the next few years, particularly with the Jewish Council of Australia?
Oh, I think the Jewish Council of Australia is going to, I don't know, well, I hope, I think it will sort of gradually strengthen as a voice. The mainstream Jewish community have the organisations, the institutions like the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, for example, have expended quite a lot of effort wooing the mainstream media, and unfortunately I think the ABC has become very much part of the mainstream media in its portrayal of what's going on in Israel and in Australia around Jewish issues. But I think they've expended quite a lot of effort influencing our political leadership, our media, and our Jewish community, trying to play down the importance of the Jewish Council of Australia. The Jewish Council of Australia represents a strong and growing minority voice of Jews, and I think the mainstream community are very nervous about that. I myself already received one text from someone I know up here on the Sunshine Coast, aggressively questioning my values as a Jew and the values of the Jewish Council of Australia. This person obviously had seen my name in the ad, and I think those of us who signed, put our signatures, the 1,000 of us or so who did, you know, we did that knowing that we're putting ourselves out there as targets for more conservative Jews to, you know, I've been called a self-hating Jew before. I think Sarah Schwartz just recently on Radio National last week got called a anti-Jew. So, you know, but we're all Jewish. And in the end, you know, we all want the same thing, I think. We all want just, well, you know, we want peace in Israel. And I guess we have different judgments about what that involves and what's required for that and what that means. And I guess that's where the difference is, because for myself, that means human rights for Palestinians and for Jews equally, and a place to live that's safe for both Palestinians and Jews. And unfortunately, I'm not fearful for how things might go here in Australia so much around the Jewish Council of Australia, but I am fearful about what it means for Gazans, for Palestinians, Gazans, and people in the West Bank, and for Jews in Israel, because it's impossible to think that what's happened over the last 3 years is going to do anything but create another generation of angry, militant Palestinians. I'm not saying that everyone who's gone through that will, you know, end up taking up arms and wanting to kill Jews. But boy, I think I'd be wanting revenge, and I'd be angry, you know, if that happened to me. And the cycle has to stop. And this current leadership in Israel is not willing to get off that horrible, you know, murderous merry-go-round. So I guess I'm fearful about that. And then, you know, what I'm fearful about also is what that means for us in the diaspora. It's these actions of Israel that put all of us in the diaspora at risk. And it's what fed into the Bondi shooting. It creates more anti-Semitism. It creates more risk for Jewish communities, you know, here in Australia. And I have to say that after the Bondi shooting, that was the first time I've ever felt unsafe as a Jew in Australia. That's the first time I ever actually really questioned my safety as a Jew in Australia. And I'm not even someone who's, you know, out there all the time, very active and Jewish, you know, in the community. I'm very integrated into the community that I live in Mullaney in southeast Queensland, and into Australia, you know, everything that goes on in Australia. But I felt for a couple of days I was actually feeling a bit of trauma around what had happened, you know, for those people that it had happened to, and also just the sense of not being safe as a Jew. And what really shocked me after Bondi too was just how quickly the right wing of, you know, of our politics and also the Jewish community jumped on that to politicise that event for their own purposes. Whereas what I saw on the progressive left side, like the Jewish Council of Australia, were people being really respectful and mourning and paying tribute to, you know, the actions that contained that event and not politicising it. I don't know. It has the capacity to do one's head in, really.
Thanks for sharing your story, Helen.
Oh, thank you.
I've been speaking with Dr. Helen Rosenbaum, currently working on the deep sea mining campaign.